Presenting sponsor of the Audible is Trader Joe's. Inside Trader Joe's is a five-part podcast series that takes you literally inside Trader Joe's. Go inside the TJ's tasting panel, travel to wineries in Napa Valley and around the world to discover the next great Trader Joe's products. Discover why they wear those super fashionable Hawaiian shirts. You'll find Inside Trader Joe's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by Stuart Mandel. We just had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Both Stu and I were at games, albeit at different games. Pretty sure Stu is a little drier than me, though.
I'm actually frankly amazed, Bruce, that we're able to talk right now. I thought for sure you would still be thawing out from that Apple Cup. What is it like to be the sideline reporter for a game during a where it seemed like it snowed basically from kickoff on through?
It did. I was checking the weather pretty much hourly the couple days going into that. We knew it was going to be cold. It was supposed to snow in the second half, according to the weather forecast. It was supposed to change from rain to snow. It was snowing pretty much from kickoff on, and then it got worse. It stuck on the ground and everything, and then late in the third quarter, I felt like the temperature dropped about 5 or 10 degrees. It got windier. It was a fun night, though, just because it was one of those games when I remember when I was a little kid, you loved playing football in the snow. I knew about it, so I was bundled up pretty well, so I wasn't too worried about the cold. But when you do a game like that, like at one point, the talkback button on my mic kind of froze a little bit, so I had one hit where my audio wasn't coming through, and there was, you know, so a few other little challenges that went into it. But it really felt like, you know, when you're on the field in the middle of that, it felt like you were in the middle of a snow globe because it was just blowing sideways and everything. You'd look up and, you know, it was a fun night. Obviously, it wasn't a fun night for Washington State, but it was a cool atmosphere to be a part of, and I'm glad. It was a little bit crazy. At the end of the night, we left the stadium to go to Spokane, which is usually about an hour and a half drive, and It was driving in a blizzard. So it was myself, Joe Davis, Brady Quinn, Joe's dad, who is his spotter, as well as my sideline producer for that day, Rick. And so we're driving on like what feel like back roads. There's barely anything that's not plowed, but there's just like maybe there's been one car that's gone down the road to lay tracks. And we're going nowhere. We're going 10, 15 miles per hour. You might get stuck. There's cars pulled off into the side of the road. At one point, we're going down this road, and all of a sudden, we see a police car, and he's got his flashers on, and the policeman's outside, and there's a downed tree in the middle of the road. So we get out, and we're like, hey, let's go lift the tree up. And we did, because there was four of us, and Joe documented the whole thing in his little cinematography way or whatever, but... And then we said to the police officer, I was like, where the heck are we? And he was like, well, you're 5 miles outside of Colfax, which is this like speed trap area. And then he goes, don't go the rest of this way. So we kind of turned around, and long story short, it took us 3.5 hours to go. It normally takes an hour and a half. And at some point towards the end of the drive, and I'm like exhausted. And I just remember thinking, because there's a couple times where you're like skidding along and you're like, well, this would be a really crappy way to die. and you start thinking, it was like, man, I don't know if you ever have these morbid thoughts, but I was like, man, if I went in this car, would I be the second person that they'd mention, or would I be the third? I know Brady's getting mentioned before me and Joe. And I was like, you know, and then I kind of like amused myself. And I was like, you know, the probably way this would get reported would be former NFL QB, comma, husband of gold medalist Alicia Sacramony and two other media types perish in snowbank in Eastern Washington.
I gotta now tell the listeners, we are doing an unusual late night episode here. It's Sunday night, 10:15 p.m. on the West Coast, 1:15 in the morning in Columbus, Ohio, where Bruce is. So yes, he's gone from Pullman to LA to Columbus. And I think that's got to be the only explanation why you're telling these morbid stories right now about being on the road, wondering where you're going to show up in the obit. I'm glad you're safe. It was obviously, a dangerous weekend there. The Washington band's bus turned over. They couldn't make it to the game. So glad you're all right. Glad you're able to talk about that. I had it relatively easy. I was in LA for the Notre Dame USC game, and that night I just kicked up my feet, got out the remote, and just switched back and forth between your game and the shootout going on. So I guess you didn't see any, obviously, this is opposite yours. The crazy shootout in Morgantown, the 59-56 Oklahoma victory.
I didn't see a lick of it. No, I did not.
All right, well,
what I miss.
Well, let me bring it up as just a segue to something, to what was clearly the biggest story of the weekend, the Ohio State-Michigan game. So what you missed was another classic, kind of like that Baker Mayfield-Pat Mahomes story you wrote a couple weeks back. Classic shootout between two Big 12 star quarterbacks and two defenses that could not stop them. Though the difference in the game, honestly, was Oklahoma with two defensive touchdowns. They on two different occasions, got a Will Grier fumble, turned it into a touchdown. So you're watching Twitter. It's so predictable at this point. In fact, amusing, right? Last Monday night, that Rams-Chiefs game, everybody, NFL Twitter is going crazy. This is the most exciting game they've ever watched. Four nights later, Oklahoma West Virginia basically played the same football game, and it's, his defenses are so terrible. This is ruining football. This isn't real football. I don't know what it is that we have this double standard. But no, their defenses aren't good. Don't get me wrong. But all I said on Twitter and got lots of backlash for it is, don't you think Kyler Murray and Will Grier have a little something to do with that?
Yeah, and I also think some of what happens is you may have fans from other conferences who have a vested interest where, you know, if there's a wild back and forth game, let's say like in a, you know, that we had on Saturday night, especially as it played out and, you know, with the overtime rules, LSU and Texas A&M, you know, I don't think anyone's going to protest at the same level, but I just think when you're the Big 12, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt from that. And that's, I think, what plays into it.
Bruce, I know you make a lot of calls this time of year for coaching carousel rumors. How much is your phone bill running these days?
I feel like I'm having to update the texting and the data charges like every, probably get hit with $15 probably every 3 days.
Wow. Well, then you're going to want to take advantage of our new sponsor, Mint Mobile. As people get their new phones this time of year for the holidays, Mint Mobile is offering the best holiday deal in wireless you've ever seen. 3 months of service for only $20, and this is only for the holiday season. So here's the deal. Ditch Verizon or whoever you have right now. Mint Mobile's $20 total gets you 3 months of wireless service with 5 gigabytes of 4G LTE data each month, plus unlimited talk and text. That would get you pretty far there, wouldn't it?
It would get me pretty far. That's a very interesting deal you're throwing at me, Stu.
It's pretty cool. You don't have to get a new phone. Use your own phone with the Mint Mobile plan. Keep your old phone number along with all your existing contacts. Mint Mobile runs on the nation's fastest, most advanced LTE network. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile, and here's how you do it. For Mint Mobile's holiday deal, 3 months of wireless for $20. And get the plan shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/audible. That's mintmobile.com/audible for 3 months of service for just $20. mintmobile.com/audible. Turn around Saturday morning. If you want to see great defense, Michigan goes into the game with the number one pass defense in the country, Don Brown's vaunted defense, Michigan Wolverines defense. And look, both of us had bought in, right? Both of us thought this was a really good Michigan team and that Ohio State was a kind of a mess. And it was just, this happens every so often in college football, one of these games where not only are you wrong in terms of who is going to win the game, but never in a gazillion years did I think you would see a final score of Ohio State 62, Michigan 39. It's one of those games where, and we'll talk about the playoff implications in a bit, but let's just think about this now. This was going to be Jim Harbaugh's opportunity. This was the most gettable Ohio State team since he's been there. This was supposedly his best team. And not only do they lose, they give up 62. How do you come back from that?
It's probably they come back from it the same way that Ohio State came back from losing by 29 to Purdue. I mean, you can't just give up, you know? I mean, I feel like people look at it as the end of the world. I know it's a crushing defeat and it's disappointing, but, like, I don't know. I mean, every team at some point has to battle through something. And, you know, I think I said this on Twitter over the weekend. You know, if you had told people that Ohio State was going to blow out Michigan in Columbus at the end of the season and told them that going into Big Ten Media Days, nobody would have thought twice about it. You know, it's just, I think this had something to do with certainly the way Michigan was playing, but I really think it had more to do with Ohio State, at least for one weekend, you know, got its act together. I mean, they were sputtering all over the place. They obviously had some issues off the field too, but I think it was more to do with Ohio State finally looked like Ohio State. I don't think this had that much to do with Michigan, to be honest with you.
Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, it reminded me of, in that way, you know, you're right. And this is not the first time we've seen this from Ohio State or from Urban Meyer. You know, it reminded me of the Big Ten championship game, 59-0 game against Wisconsin. That kind of came out of nowhere. And that was with Cardale Jones making his first start. So there is something to that. And also Ohio State, you know, had played so poorly on defense and really played, you know, very well, gave up some late touchdowns, but the game was out of hand by then. No, I guess what I was saying is 10-2 is a perfectly good season for Michigan. They may still go to the Rose Bowl if Ohio State were to make the playoff. But I don't know. I think this is a pretty troubling moment if you're a Michigan football fan, because if not now, when? And the reason I said earlier there was a segue from the Oklahoma-West Virginia game is, I just think this showed that Jim Harbaugh's approach to football might not be able to cut it at the highest level. You can win 10 games in 2018. You can win 10 games. You can beat Wisconsin. You can beat Michigan State. Running the ball, being fairly safe and conservative on offense and playing good defense. But occasionally, you're going to get into a shootout. And this was a game where Dwayne Haskins was on fire. So whether you're facing Dwayne Haskins or Will Greer or Tua, Kyler Murray, I think in this day and age, you have to have an offense that can keep up, because it's just not realistic that your defense is going to hold teams to 20 points or less every week. And Alabama and Nick Saban have gotten that message. You know, they're not playing that brand of football anymore. Jim Harbaugh's still playing football like it's Bo Schembechler out there.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think there was just a talent gap between the more talented team won. I think it's just that simple. Ohio State played an A game, and if they play their A game, there's probably only two teams that can hang with them. They haven't played anywhere near that this season.
So you think it's just he's just got to go out and keep recruiting better players?
I do. I really think it's that.
Stay the course, just get better players.
Yeah, look, if Dwayne Haskins leaves to go to the NFL, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it might, because obviously his stock is pretty high right now. My guess is he might be better served to come back and spend a little more time in college, just for a lot of reasons. But if he leaves, game's going to be played in Ann Arbor next year. Obviously, Michigan's going to lose some good players too. But, you know, I don't think this is like completely a sky is falling, you got to fire Jim Harbaugh, you know, whatever. I just think that they ran into a team that was playing about as well as they can play, and they're really talented. And I just think people forgot how talented they were. So, you know, we get caught into overreacting a lot early in the season. You know, I feel like we may be doing a little of that right now.
Well, I you may think I'm doing a little bit of that. I try to avoid the massive overreacting. I don't know. I think you don't have to fire Jim Harbaugh. They go to a bowl game, win the bowl game, they'll be 11-2. That's a perfectly good season. But, you know, they hired him to beat Ohio State. They hired him to go to the playoff, to win the Big Ten and go to the playoff. I'm going to need to see something in the way of modernization, reinvention. Brian Kelly's a guy who we've seen do that recently. I don't think you can just keep doing the same thing you've been doing, and eventually you're going to have better players than Ohio State, because Ohio State's always going to have great players. And certainly Alabama and Clemson and Georgia are going to have great players. So what are you going to do to differentiate yourself? But okay, this leaves us with our first, I know it's already the last week of the season, and we finally have our first legitimate playoff rankings controversy to come. Tuesday night, I think we know what the top four will be, right? Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Notre Dame 3, Georgia 4. But man, who is going to be 5 is the big question. OU, Ohio State, who you got?
Who do I got or who I think they'll have?
Who do you think they'll have? It doesn't really matter who you and I have.
Yeah, I think they will have Oklahoma there.
Yeah.
Here's why I think they'll have Oklahoma there. I think because Oklahoma to them is not disappointing. They don't. Oklahoma's defense is not good, but I think people are used to that being not good. Kyler Murray's been, their offense has been fantastic. But I just think people don't look at them and go, well, this is an underachieving team. Whereas Ohio State, for a lot of ways, it feels like they've only played a one-game season where they've kind of sputtered and fumbled around and still found ways to beat the Nebraskas and Indianas. And teams, quite honestly, whether it's TCU or teams that are not top 10, top 20 caliber teams, where until last weekend against Michigan. And so I think if you ask me, who do I think is the more dangerous team? Who would I not want to play in the playoff? If I was Notre Dame, let's say, and I know that won't happen because that's probably a 3-4 matchup, but I would not want to play Ohio State. I'd rather play them than Oklahoma.
Yeah, this is probably to determine who Alabama's opponent is going to be.
I don't know. I'd like to see Lincoln Riley and Kyler Murray, but ultimately I don't think they would hold up. I still think there's a lot of appeal for a bunch of reasons for the Urban Meyer, Nick Saban back and forth. I do think that would be an interesting matchup.
So I think you're right. I did a big resume comparison for Forward Pass on Monday morning. And frankly, I wouldn't say it's not close, but it's definitely most of the numbers point toward Oklahoma right now. And of course, the single biggest thing is if they come out Tuesday night and it's OU over Ohio State and they say why, all he's got to do is say, well, they both have good wins, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, Oklahoma lost by a field goal to Texas and Ohio State lost 49-20 to Purdue. It's hard to, if you really are looking at the whole resume and not getting caught up in just this one great game last week, I don't know how you would overlook that. Now, the question is, okay, that's this week, right? That's Ohio State closing the gap, moving back ahead of UCF. Obviously, LSU lost, so they're not going to be in between those two teams anymore. Washington State's not going to be between those two. I would assume they're going to be right next to each other. And so let's just say Oklahoma stays ahead of them. Okay, is there any way is Ohio State just done at that point? Because, obviously they want Texas to beat Oklahoma. But if Oklahoma beats Texas, who is 9-3 and probably in or near the top 10 at this point, what can Ohio State do against 8-4 Northwestern to then have the committee change their mind?
That's a great question. I don't think there is anything, because on one hand, you'd have Oklahoma avenging their only loss. And on the other hand, I think the committee certainly looks at Texas as a much better team than a Northwestern team that didn't win a game in their non-conference schedule. I mean, they're not going to get a huge boost off of that. We talked about the 59-0 Wisconsin Ohio State game.
Yeah.
That Wisconsin team was a lot more highly regarded than this Northwestern group.
The only thing I can think is that, look, we know the committee is really, really down on Oklahoma's defense, and understandably so. It's 103rd in the country in yards per play allowed. So if they were to win the game, but it's another one of these Oklahoma has no defense games, and then if Ohio State plays against Northwestern the way they played against Michigan, at that point now it's not just one game. Now you have at least two games of evidence that, okay, Ohio State has figured this thing out. But I don't know. That's that. But then at the same time, Oklahoma would have just beaten a 9-3 team, whatever the way they got there was. So I know.
And by the way, just for full disclosure, you threw out an embarrassing defensive stat for Oklahoma, 103rd. You know where Ohio State ranks in that category?
Not much higher, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, 76th. That's not good either.
Yeah, and here's what, for all the talk about Oklahoma's defense, what's not getting talked about enough is how unbelievable their offense is. So I think for most of the season, Alabama, obviously with Tua, touchdown drive on the first quarter of every game, they were considered the most explosive offense. Oklahoma's was kind of right in the same neighborhood. Well, now Oklahoma's averaging 8.9 yards per play. Alabama is number 2 at 8.04. That's almost a full yard less. If you compare Oklahoma's offense to Ohio State's, and by the way, Ohio State's offense is in the top 15, and Oklahoma averages more than 2 yards more than Ohio State yards per play. I mean, it's a historic level. It would shatter records if they were to keep this up. So, look, defense wins championships has been the traditional motto, slogan, whatever you want to call it. But at some point, you do have to step back and say, holy cow, this offense is good.
Yeah, just to underscore that, too, and this was a number I was kind of kicking around. When they play ranked opponents, they're actually averaging 8.98 yards per play. It's even better than the all game total. So it's not like they're just doing it against nobodies. Now, you can say they're doing it in the Big 12 and what's, you know, giving a knock on the Big 12, but those are still supposed to be better thought of teams, and they're obviously not missing a beat at all. So fun stuff on Tuesday night coming.
I got one last scenario to throw at you. Okay, let's say both those teams win their conference championship games and finish 12-1, Power 5 champs. To this point, a 12-1 Power 5 champ has never been left out of the playoff. Could we possibly have two get left out if Georgia beats Alabama?
I don't see Alabama getting snubbed.
I really don't. Either. I don't either. I don't. They're the first. What a crazy stat CBS uncovered, by the way. Hats off to whoever their researcher is for figuring this one out. They are the first team since Yale in 1888 to win their first 12 games by 20 points or more. They've been the most dominant team in the country, and it hasn't even been close. So even if they lose this game to the number 4 team in the country, you know, I think they would be able to, they would put them in the playoff, and they would justify it in part because of Oklahoma and Ohio State's defenses. You know, I mean, by the way, also, I think you could actually make a case for Georgia, but that would be, there would be hell to pay if two-loss Georgia got in ahead of any 12-1 Power 5 champs.
Why would you put a two-loss Georgia in? I don't understand that logic.
I don't think if it comes down to, you know, we always talk
what
about...
What are you basing that off?
Well, we always talk like, about best or most deserving. Georgia would definitely not be the most deserving in that scenario, I don't think.
But they lost by 20 at LSU. That was already their one loss. But I don't know where you're giving me... like these wow victories that would justify a two-loss Georgia going over a one-loss conference champ.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would because their best wins, if they do not win the game
Florida?
This week, are Florida and Kentucky. Both of them were by at least 17 points. Both of them were away from home, but neither of them are on the level of Ohio State beating Michigan as soundly as it did. Would say they're on the level of Oklahoma beating West Virginia or Oklahoma beating Texas. But Oklahoma actually has 4 wins right now over top 25 teams.
And they didn't lose by 20.
Cracked the top 25.
I mean, they got blown out. Though.
I guess the question would be, though, okay, without knowing how the game Saturday is going to play out, or any of these games are going to play out Saturday, just as of today, throw out every stat, throw out every resume. Who do you think is the better team, Oklahoma or Georgia?
I think Ohio State's the better team of those three.
Okay.
I have more of a toss-up Oklahoma-Georgia, but I'm going to say Oklahoma just because I right now have more faith in their offense.
I think subjectively, Georgia's still the best team of that group. They're averaging.
You would pick Georgia over Ohio State?
I mean, you said not to overreact about Michigan losing that game. I think you are overreacting to the Ohio State's win if you're just forgetting now that they gave up 51 to Maryland the week before, lost by 29 to Purdue, you know, had close calls against some pretty bad teams along the way. It sounds like you've already thrown all that out and now believe.
Well, here's the
best
problem
version
I have
of Ohio
with
State
that.
Is the only version of Ohio State.
No, you're right, but here's the problem I have with that logic. Like, I think you'd be giving Georgia a pass. Georgia's most impressive win is against Florida. I don't think Florida's anywhere near as good as Michigan. And that's why, like, I just don't look. Like, Kentucky's a good story this year. I don't, like, I think the SEC East is not anywhere near as good as the Big Ten East.
So there are basically what it comes down to is in terms of just like straight up like the kind of resume nuggets that you just mentioned, which we know the committee loves, like top 25 wins, they don't have them. If you're looking at just stats that say this is a really good team, you know, we've been talking a lot about yards per play. Georgia's third in the country on offensive yards per play and sixth in the country in defensive yards per play allowed. Their defense is miles better than Oklahoma and Ohio State's. So if you're, I don't know, setting a line in Vegas, I would think you'd have Georgia above those teams. But if you're saying who deserves to be in the playoff,
and they don't beat Alabama, they're 2-loss Georgia. I don't see the case.
Yeah, look, if they lose to Alabama, they're not going in. I'm sorry. I think we're doing like the ESPN Tuesday night dance right now.
All right, so the legitimate debates then are Oklahoma versus Ohio State. We both think Oklahoma right now, and we both think that if Alabama loses, they're going to bump any of those teams out of the playoff.
Yeah. Any chance, I think I know the answer to this, but any chance if Clemson's going to play a well overmatched Pitt, so even if they win 63-0, they're not going to get a push off it. Whereas Georgia, even, let's say Alabama really struggles with Georgia, there's no shot that Clemson can move into the number one spot, is there?
I don't think so, because you know, you want to talk about resume, play the resume game. That Pitt losing, by the way, 23-0 to Miami, which was bizarre, you know, means that they're not in the top 25, which means Clemson is going to go 13-0, and the only top 25 wins they're going to be able to claim from the entire
season.
A&M, and that's only because A&M pulled out a 7-overtime win the other day, or they wouldn't be in there. A&M and Syracuse. So they, I don't know why what case you can make for them to be number one. They also just gave up 600 yards to South Carolina. If people are troubled by that at all. Heck, would you be surprised at all if the committee put Notre Dame number two?
I'd be a little surprised. I mean, they had their hands full with USC. It's not even a, you know, it's a USC team that didn't make a bowl. So I'd be a little surprised. Also, keep in mind, Stu, that Michigan team that you were just crapping over about 20 minutes ago, that's their best win. It's still a good win,
yeah,
but it doesn't carry as much weight now that they've been thumped by Ohio State the way they were.
No, I think it'll stay. I think the order will stay the same, which means you're probably looking at this point almost. I guess we can't. Can we lock in that Clemson Notre Dame? I guess we can't, because if Alabama loses, then maybe Clemson moves up to one. But back to the podcast in a second. But Bruce, we are thrilled to welcome back one of our favorite sponsors, Mack Weldon.
I know you love those sweatshirts and the underwear you get from them.
I do indeed. I just got a great brand new pull-up sweatshirt, and I can't take the thing off. It's just so comfortable. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. They have the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. They have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well, too. Great for working out, going to work, going out on dates, just everyday life. So, Bruce, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter promo code AUDIBLE at checkout. Again, I can't say enough how comfortable their clothing is. For 20% off that first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter promo code AUDIBLE at checkout. Right now, on paper, Clemson, Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. Now, speaking of Notre Dame, I went down to L.A. to see the Irish clinch their playoff berth. But it almost, first of all, the celebration by Notre Dame afterward was so muted and so kind of blasé. It was like, do you guys not realize what you just did here? 12-0. You're going to the playoff. Like, I know there's not a trophy for it, but nope, there were some, you know, guys shouting, that's 12. But for the most part, it was, you know, that's not what we came here for. We came here to win the national championship. You know, this was just, we clinched this goal, but no, we came here to win national championships. Brian Kelly, pretty stoic about it as well. I think the drama around USC and Clay Helton ended up kind of swallowing up the Notre Dame side of it. And then you and I were actually on the phone Sunday morning. I was in a cab on the way to LAX. We were on the phone when the email popped in, USC keeping Clay Helton. And even though everybody kept saying all season long that that's where it seemed to be headed, I just still can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I knew you were convinced that no matter what, they were going to make the change.
No, I just felt like at some five, there were the 5-7 would be the point of no return. And I get why Lynn Swann wants to make it work. I really do. But if you were at this game Saturday night, you would have seen a plane flying over the stadium with a banner that read, "Lynn Swann, please fire Clay Helton." You would have seen, you know, during a timeout, one of those, you know, Jumbotron PSAs. Clay Helton comes on the screen. "Hey, thank you, fans." They boo him. he's going to come back next year amidst that. This fan base is totally just done with Clay Helton, no matter what Lynn Swann says to them in an email.
Well, Clay Helton's going to have to do, or it would behoove him to make some splashy staff moves where I think that makes it a little more palatable for USC fans. I mean, look, he's coming back whether they like it or not. And, you know, if he can spruce up his offense and maybe bring a little more juice to his staff, at least they'll probably approve of that, because I think one of the things, just knowing some of the USC fan base as I do, that doesn't sit well is a lot of the hires on the staff feel a little like they felt about Clay Helton, which was like, hey, who are we competing with to get these guys? You know, Alabama hires Jeff Banks to be the special teams guy away from, had been at Texas A&M, was a very coveted guy. They had hired Josh Gattis from Penn State, another really coveted guy. And I think when people looked at what USC was doing, they were not getting guys where it was like either coaches on their way up or people, they weren't sure how they fit. And so I think that's a little bit of the problem. And we'll see if he has any answers for it. My other question to you is, and I think I'll ask this question on behalf of Matt Fortune and Max Olson, do you feel like you wasted the company's money making that trip down there for that game?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, it was a dud of a game. And by the way, the 7-overtime LSU A&M game was going on while we were doing interviews and sitting in the Brian Kelly press conference. I kept looking over. Brian Fisher had it playing on his iPad. I just kept looking over. Still going. Still not over. Still going. Yeah, I would have liked to have been watching that game. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it gives me even more perspective, though, on how unusual a situation this is for him to be coming back. By the way, something you said earlier, I think that should have been Lynn Swann's email. It should have just been said, he's coming back. Deal with it. He's not wrong in his general point of this is a program that's been rocked by turmoil for many years. It could really use some stability, and making another coaching change certainly would not be, a sign of stability. But I think it's going to be, I don't think the turmoil is going away with that email. There's still going to be the consternation. They're opening, they're renovating the Coliseum right now. Half the stadium wasn't even there the other day. They're going to unveil this brand new stadium next year, Fresno State season one. And it would be embarrassing if there's, 40,000 empty seats in the stadium. So he's got to be right. He's got to make some big staff changes. But more than that, he's got to do something to win people's confidence back. And at this point, I think because of something you said before, a lot of people thought, wait a minute, who are we competing with in the first place to get this guy? And then they give him an extension. People don't think he was qualified for the job to begin with. Maybe that's unfair, but a lot of people feel that way. And so to prove that he is, I mean, what would it take next year? Because I don't think, 9-3, win the division, go to the championship game, I don't think that's enough. What does he have to do for people to say, you know what, Lynn Swann, the guy we made fun of so much, he's a genius for having seen this through?
I think he needs to get them in the top 10 next year. And that, I'll be honest, I think that's doable.
Weren't they in the top 10? They won the Pac-12 and they were in the top 10 the last 2 years, and that wasn't enough.
Yeah, I think that's a good step. Look, I think again, and I think this is always worth bringing up whenever we talk about coaching hires, is what is quote-unquote success for them? What is success for Kansas and Les Miles? What is success for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt? What is success for Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M? And I would make the case here, I think what USC would need to see is a bounce back year that we can win the Pac-12 and be a top 10 team without Sam Darnold would be a big step. Ultimately, though, if you're a USC head coach, you're going to be judged on now, did you get us in the playoff or not? And until that happens, I think there's going to be a lot of skepticism, because as much as he won before, it was easy for them to write off, them being the critics, because, you had one great player who kind of carried the program, which Sam Darnold, to a large extent, did. No credit for Clay Helton and those guys for going after him. But I think that's the reality, is for a lot of coaches, they are not going to get the benefit of the doubt. And I just think that this is kind of, you're either Urban Meyer and Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney, or you're not, or you're pretty much everybody else. I mean, look, We talked about James Franklin a couple of times. A lot of people think he is overrated. A lot of people, you know, whether it's Mike Gundy or Mike Leach or whoever, I just feel like there's always, I mean, just, you know, earlier on this podcast, I felt like you were talking about Jim Harbaugh, like Jim Harbaugh was a 500 coach. I know you weren't, but that's kind of the, you know, like he's just, you're either a great coach or you're just a coach. You know, that's how it feels like this discussion kind of unfolds in a lot of ways.
Well, to be clear, Jim Harbaugh is a lot more accomplished coach at this point than Clay Helton is. I think this is just such an error in judgment. And by the way, I was our buddy Ryan Abraham, I was walking out of the stadium with him, and we were reminiscing. And this was before we knew, obviously, that Lynn Swann would actually go through with this. And I was reminding him of the time that you and I were recording an episode of this podcast. You were driving somewhere, and the news broke, and I had to inform you over the phone that USC had hired Lynn Swann, no experience whatsoever in this arena, as the AD, and I think you almost ran off the road. And yeah. Everything that we were expressing that day is coming to fruition here. He's showing he has absolutely no grasp of the constituency there.
Do you think there, if I give you a percent chance, before he, when, as long as he's still the head coach, what percent chance would you put that Clay Helton gets USC into a playoff?
I mean, it's not going to be as low as maybe you might expect me to say, because we know that there's talent there, and if you can get it.
And it's young talent.
It's young talent. The Pac-12 is there for the taking. I'll be there Friday night for 9-3 Washington against 9-3 Utah. I mean, this is not that tall a hill to climb. Chance of him getting into the playoff, 22%.
Okay. That's a little lower than I was going to be, but.
What do you say?
I would say 35%.
The only reason I don't have it higher is I don't think he's going to be there more than another year. I think this was just delaying the inevitable.
You think he goes 7-5 next year and they pull the plug?
I don't know what his record will be next year. And maybe it'll be, I mean, you saw against Notre Dame, you saw flashes. You saw a team that has talent but can't get out of its own way. They killed themselves so many times with dumb penalties, and it's been that way all season.
Here's what I think they need. One thing that needs to happen this offseason. Somebody used to play there had told me this. And by the way, whenever I say somebody used to play there, people always assume it's Leinart. It's not.
Or Petros.
Or Petros. Petros doesn't need me to spin his stuff anyway. But so this person said, being around the team a little bit, was when you go to the practices, just the vibe was a little too low-key, meaning even when Pete Carroll was the head coach, they had some ass kickers on the staff. They had Ed Ogeron, who was a super intense D-line coach. They had Kennedy Pola, who was a super intense running back coach. The O-line coach was had a nasty streak. And the point being, players weren't screwing with that. And that's where some of the discipline area kind of wanes a little bit, or a lot. And Clay Helton's a super nice guy. I think he's a really decent man. You can be that as a head coach, but I think it behooves you to have some other guys with more of an edge to kind of counterbalance that. And I think that's one of the things I'll be curious to see if he tries to go hire some of those guys.
Well, this guy doesn't necessarily fit that description, but I'll tell you what, Cliff Kingsbury is now unemployed. If Clay Helton can convince Cliff Kingsbury to come be his offensive coordinator, I will up my playoff projection ranking there, a percentage chance there, quite a bit. We should get to the coaching carousel. Few moves came down on Sunday. Not necessarily high-profile ones, now that USC is keeping Clay Helton, but openings at Texas Tech, openings at North Carolina. And, you know, you're crushing it with your looks at the possible candidates. People love those stories. Who's your front runner for those two jobs?
For North Carolina, I think there's a couple of guys I would say would have the inside track, and one is so local, and that is Scott Satterfield. At Appalachian State, he keeps winning. He's a local guy. He's really good X and O's. Mike Norvell from Memphis. Mike Norvell is also a really good offensive coach. He's one of those guys who I think you could see coaching, one of the rare guys who could coach in any region of the country, in any Power 5, I think, ultimately. But he also knows Bubba Cunningham, the North Carolina AD, pretty well from their time together at Tulsa when he was an assistant on Todd Graham's staff. Former North Carolina coach, Mack Brown, who would love to get back into coaching, I'm told, if it's the right situation. We both like Mac Brown personally quite a bit. I know he's been at ESPN, does a nice job there, but he was run. It seemed like he had run out of gas in Austin a couple of years before he stepped down, and that was 5 years ago. I know Les Miles just got hired. I also know how you feel about that one, but
he's been out coaching for 5 years. He was North Carolina's coach 20 years ago. Texas Tech, Cliff Kingsbury. I know that can't be an easy separation there. Being, you know, he is Texas Tech in a lot of people's minds, but he just didn't get it done. And so the question now is, do you continue the air raid tradition at Texas Tech, or do you go somewhere else?
Yeah, that's the weird one. So Kirby Hocutt is the AD there, and he was a former linebacker at K-State, where his best friend was Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator. Brent Venables, as everybody knows by now, has been very choosy. He likes his situation at Clemson. He's not just going to leave. He may never be a head coach. He can coach his son now, who's at Clemson. Now he knows the Big 12. Not only was he at K-State, he was also a defense coordinator, spent a lot of years at OU. One of the things I had heard was there was some interest in possibly having Brent Venables and go get Graham Harrell, another guy who's probably the greatest quarterback Texas Tech has ever had. I feel weird saying that now that I know how good of an NFL quarterback Pat Mahomes is. But Graham Harrell's a really good offensive coach at North Texas, probably only a matter of time before he's a head coach. But that's the combination. And if Brent Venables is looking at it going, hey, I really trust this AD, I think I can get something going there, that kind of is the best of both worlds, maybe in some other people's eyes. Whereas the other air raid, pure air raid head coach guys, Dana Holgorsen, is this seen as a lateral move? Obviously, he's a really accomplished coach. He's done a really good job at West Virginia. I'd say Texas Tech has better facilities. The other thing it might do is, it would probably restart his clock where, as I put in the story, you know, I feel like any time a head coach has been somewhere at least five seasons, and this is Holgorsen's seventh, once they have like around a 500 season, they're pretty close to being on the hot seat. And Dana Holgorsen's going to lose Will Grier and those receivers and his star left tackle, and that's not an easy job there. So I could see there being some interest. I could certainly see Kirby being interested in him. Neil Brown, kind of an air raid guy, has those roots, even though he doesn't really run it. Seth Luttrell, also another Mike Leach disciple. One guy who's not, Matt Wells from Utah State, who I think has a chance at Colorado. And then there's just like, you know, you look at it, and I would say probably throw out two other wild cards. Jim Leavitt, who, by the way, was the defensive coordinator when Kirby Hocutt and Brent Venables played at K-State. And he's a Texas guy and whatnot and has some connections there. And the wildest of all would be, could Mike Leach come back there? Would Mike Leach come back there? Would they want? Well, I
so
think
that's
want
what I was going to ask you that if you didn't bring it up on your own. Don Williams of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, been covering Texas Tech football since 1986, tweeted a few hours ago, two sources have told me in the past few hours that Mike Leach, pirate of the South Plains turned Palouse, is open to returning to Texas Tech, and a number of big-dollar supporters will push for it. But does Kirby Hocutt want to go down that road? My guess is no, he wouldn't want to go down that road and all the controversy that would come with it, but would Mike Leach want to go there?
That's the same road that I felt like we were going down in the snowy avalanche on Friday night. It's about as smooth.
I mean, wasn't it just this summer that Mike Leach was still tweeting about all the money Texas Tech owes him?
Yeah, I'm going to use probably a politically incorrect analogy on this, but it's almost like the couple that used to hang out together, but they're not very good together and they fight. They probably don't need to be. They probably see each other at the bar. And that's probably as close as they need to be.
Kind of like that awkward Baker Mayfield Hugh Jackson interaction after the Browns Bengals game.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Real quick, last thing, we're gonna get to the mailbag, but I almost forgot one of my favorite moments of Coaching Carousel Sunday, if you want to call it that. Illinois is giving Lovie Smith a 2-year contract extension. Just window dressing there. Gotta do that to appease recruits, or Josh Whitman truly, truly believes that things are on the right track.
I think Josh Whitman's pretty tied into Lovie, so I think he was the one who went out on the limb and hired him. So they did get a little better, by the way. I'm not saying I believe Lovie's going to get them to, you know, especially that division is going to get better. One other aside, and this may change in the next 24 hours, but all things have been pointing since Thursday that Jeff Brohm may in fact stay at Purdue, which would be a huge win for Purdue.
Huge. And that may become outdated very quickly by the time you hear this podcast. Wait. You just said Illinois got a lot better?
I thought they got a little better. Yeah.
They lost to Iowa 63-0 last week. They lost to Nebraska 54-35. I will give them this one, though. They beat Minnesota 55-31. And then Minnesota, for reasons I can't explain, suddenly turned around and beat Purdue 41-10. Lost Northwestern 24-14, and then on Saturday kicked Wisconsin's rear to become bowl eligible, huh? PJ Fleck 6-6 in what was supposed to be year zero.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what to make of our Wisconsin. That was a bad preseason pick.
We blew it. I mean, that's just unexplainable. I'm sorry. With what they had coming back from a team that went, what, 12-1 last year? 13-1 last year? 7-5 and get your butt kicked by Minnesota?
So here's why I think they are better than they were. They won two games in year one. They won twice as many this year. They lost by double digits last year to Rutgers. Okay.
Beat them pretty badly this year.
Do I need to go on? They are much better.
All I know is that on Saturday, Pat Fitzgerald sat his starting quarterback and his star running back in the fourth quarter, like they're an NBA team, resting their starters for the stretch run for the Big Ten championship. And the score was 24-9. It wasn't like 70-3. And he said afterward, well, I thought we could win with the guys we had. So that's where Illinois football is, and that's who they're extending.
Do you want to get to the mailbag?
Let's get to the mailbag. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Derek Johnson asks something that we brought up right at the beginning, but maybe you can go into a little more detail. I think people are curious. Dear Bruce, the snow and wintry conditions in Pullman look brutal. What do you do in those conditions to stay warm, and how do the support staffs try and help the players on the sidelines? I thought he was going to say that, how do they support you? And was there any consideration between Fox and Washington State to try to move the game to earlier in the day? How feasible would that have been? Thanks.
No, that wouldn't be feasible because I don't know where they would have put it on TV. So that's one thing. Staying warm, you kind of just know going ahead of time. So our friend Ed Ashoff, I feel like he's following my footprints into the sideline world. Smart move, Ed. You're wise beyond your ears. But I talked to Ed the night before. So he was working as the sideline person for ESPN Radio. And For the same game, yes. So I kind of coached him through, hey, you're going to be outside. You can't wear, you know, you can't wear jeans, or you can't wear something that's like basically going to get soaked through because it's going to be, you're going to be wet and cold and just, you need, you know, whatever. Stuff like any adult probably would already know. So he went shopping Friday morning. And you just bundle up as much as you can because you're out there for 5 or 6 hours. You're not out there for you know, like, there's a halftime. There's not a halftime for us. There isn't, I mean, there's a halftime, but it's like you're out there. You're out there for a couple hours before the game. So it's, I mean, it's probably 6 hours out there. So you just bundle up as much as you can. I mean, you know, what sucked was I have these kind of hiking boots that I bought a year ago before our K-State game. And they got soaked, and because they're heavy, I was going to wear them on the plane the next day. So dry socks become wet socks in a hurry. So it just kind of drags on. As far as what the support staff does is, you know, they had a lot of heaters. They had those big parkas. I thought it was interesting is that Washington players seem much more comfortable in it on the sideline, much less on the field. Whereas you saw a lot of Washington State players, it seemed to me, and this is all anecdotal, but it definitely seemed to me that they were spent more time huddled around the heaters than the Washington players did.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So I got a mailbag question a couple weeks ago about, you know, what would happen if Alabama went and had to play, you know, Michigan in Ann Arbor and it was 20 degrees. And I downplayed it. I said, I don't think great teams like that lose games because it's cold. Well, it sure seemed like Washington. So in this case, this was not a Southern team going up there. This is Washington State in its own city. in a climate it knows well. And it seemed like that was just like kryptonite to the air raid. Like Gardner Minshew just did not. I mean, I know Washington's defense had a lot to do with it, obviously, but it also just seemed like if you got an offense that's going to throw 60 times a game, you better hope it's not cold and snowy.
Yeah, it's usually you do not talk to coaches in the middle of the games, and one of the offensive coaches, who was standing near at one point when the ball was down on the other side of the field, and the snow was starting to stick, and he turned to me and he goes, "This is okay for us. This is really bad for them." And he was right, because they throw it a lot, and they, as Leach told me at halftime, he's like, "We cannot get explosive plays." And they're, that's a lot of them because they're really good on defense, but the conditions are not helping.
It seems to me Mike might think about getting his next job somewhere very warm.
Yeah, or get Washington off the schedule.
Or get Washington
in the Pac-12.
Or get Jimmy Lake head coach. Get Jimmy Lake off that staff and get him somewhere else.
Let him go to Lubbock.
We got a couple questions. These are two different fans of two different teams. Very similar questions, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. Andrew, Stu and Bruce, a win in Friday's championship game would put Washington in the Rose Bowl, likely against Ohio State. For many Huskies fans, that's about as good as it gets. In fact, if given the choice of having to travel to Arlington or Miami and likely getting blown out against Alabama, or facing off against a prominent Big Ten opponent in the Rose Bowl, I think a lot of Husky fans, as well as fans of other Pac-12 schools in a similar position, would choose the latter. Do you agree? And if so, do you think fans of schools and other conferences with desirable traditional bowl tie-ins feel similarly? And then Quinn from Bowling Green, Ohio says, am I alone as an Ohio State fan preferring a trip to Pasadena instead of a playoff slot? I'd be fine with a playoff slot, but Ohio State's only been to two Rose Bowls in the last 20 years despite all their success, and it would be nice to see them there for the tradition. This is a very – I don't think any other fans in any other conferences understand, and in fact are probably dumbfounded, that Big Ten and Pac-12 fans still feel this strongly about a game that's not in the college football playoff. And yet, not so much for the Ohio State guy, because that's what they play for there is playoffs and national championships. But for Washington, I totally see why this would be preferable.
Yeah, I mean, I still kind of surprises me just how you framed it. For whatever it's worth, and this is not would you rather be in the playoff or would you be in the Rose Bowl, but we were talking to Chris Peterson in our production meetings on Thursday or Wednesday, I guess it was. And he talked about, because I think I'd asked him about, you have a shot to play in the Rose Bowl. And I think Joe had asked him, have you ever been there? And he said, no. And I said, well, what are your memories of growing up? Because he's a California kid, and he said, or a California guy. And he said, to me, I didn't grow up in the era of the BCS or the playoff. The Rose Bowl is a granddaddy of them all. It's Keith Jackson. That's a big deal. And so there's still a lot of that game is romanticized, especially for people who grew up on the West Coast, I think, because it's in Pasadena, and I just think it was such a big deal. And he articulated it pretty well. I think when you talk about Keith Jackson, it just has like kind of a folklore quality about it. So
no question. If you grew up on the West Coast or if you grew up in the Midwest, the Rose Bowl was the pinnacle. I still hold it in very high regard, although I realize it's been devalued a little bit. But wait, did you just say, I mean, I know he's played games at the stadium, obviously, but he's saying, Chris Peterson saying he's never been to the Rose Bowl game?
No, that's what he said.
That's unbelievable. I almost feel unworthy that I've been to 10 or 11 of them, and one of the most prominent coaches in the country has never been to one. I know I'm going to stay neutral. I mean, Kyle Whittingham's never coached in a Rose Bowl, so it'd be good for either of them Friday night, but like now I kind of want to see him get there. Like that guy deserves to be in a Rose Bowl.
Well, yeah.
He's been in Fiesta Bowls and a Peach Bowl, but no Rose Bowl.
You know who's never coached in a Rose Bowl either?
Mike Leach.
Nick Saban.
Are you sure about that?
I am sure.
And even as an assistant?
That's a good question.
Like, head coaches, that's pretty selective. But a lot of guys,
I mean, because he did coach at Michigan State.
Yeah, a lot of guys, like, they were there on the staff in 19-whatever as an assistant at such and such school. Now, Chris Peterson didn't come up that way, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's never been to the Rose Bowl.
I'll get back to you on that. Give me another question.
This question was for me, and I'll answer it. Robert Madel, love the pod. Stu, you tweeted this. I can't even switch to the Apple Cup for 45 seconds without missing a long play in Morgantown. What is your TV setup? Do you not have more than one TV to watch multiple games? Even when I was watching the Apple Cup, I had my phone on the Oklahoma-West Virginia game. So I've done it many different ways over the years. I sat in the avocado room where they had like 10 games going on at once. I've had multiple TVs, I've had laptops open, and I have to say, I really do find the most effective way is just to switch between games. And I know, Bruce, you probably completely disagree with me, but I find if you're watching like a big wall of games, as cool as that sounds, your eyes either end up focused primarily on just one, or you're darting around so much you don't really see, you end up seeing nothing. You end up seeing bits and pieces, but nothing meaningful of anything. Something about working a remote, it's very active. You're actively involved in, okay, this game's hit a slow point. Let me try this one. Let me try that one. And it really helps, by the way, to have Twitter, because even if you do miss something, you can usually catch it immediately and switch over in time to see the replay. So that's what I do. I was also in a hotel that night, so I didn't really have a choice, but I'm a one TV guy.
I differ from you, but we know that. I like that setting. I actually went over to Fox on Saturday when I landed to watch a bunch of games, and I like that experience. It's just very, you feel like you can stay on top of everything. By the way, to clarify, I was wrong. Nick Saban did, in fact, coach in a Rose Bowl. As an assistant, he spent 2 years at Ohio State. No Rose Bowl there. But in 1987, as the defensive coordinator for George Perlis in Michigan State, his Spartans beat USC in the Rose Bowl.
There you have it. From Wes in Seattle. I don't know why, but our mailbag questions are almost entirely West Coast-based, which is probably good because we didn't really talk much Pac-12 at all in the earlier part of the podcast. Wes from Seattle. Hey, Bruce and Stu. Going into the season, I didn't understand the Herm Edwards hire at Arizona State at all, and I thought it was going to be a disaster. At the same time, I thought that Kevin Sumlin was a sneaky good hire for Arizona, and that he was set up to have early success, especially paired with a talented QB, Khalil Tate, and a historically soft Pac-12 South. But watching the two teams play Saturday and seeing the Sun Devils complete a crazy comeback to beat Arizona and keep the Wildcats out of a bowl game, Arizona State felt like the program with all the energy and character. It's still early, but after one season, I probably feel better about Herm's next few years than I do Sumlin's. How about you guys?
You could definitely make that case. I mean, I think Arizona was one of the bigger disappointments in the country. Khalil Tate had some moments. J.J. Taylor's a really good running back, but I don't know. It just feels really disjointed there. It just does. They're not good on defense. They definitely have some playmakers, but I'll be honest, Herm did better than I thought he would. I'm not sure it gets better than this there. My hunch is it won't. They're going to lose Manny Wilkins. We'll see what happens with N'Keal Harry. I don't think they're going to be a top 25 team. I think they may go to bowls. They may be 7-5. I don't think it's going to get much better than that.
Well, then that would basically just be Todd Graham 2.0.
Yes.
Although even Todd Graham won 10 games 1 year. By the way, Todd Graham was on the Notre Dame sideline for that entire Notre Dame USC game the other night.
Did you guys talk at all or no?
No, he was with his son, and I assume he was an invited guest of Chip Long's, but did not get a chance to talk to him. But yeah, he was down there. When they got off to the 10-0 start, to 10-0 deficit, I thought maybe he had poisoned them by association or something. No, so why do you, I don't necessarily, I'm not saying you're crazy wrong by any means, but why? What about this first season with Herm made you think this is as good as it'll get?
Here's why. Because I think the division will probably get a little better. UCLA is not going to be a 3-win team much longer. I think USC will bounce back. I'm not saying Clay Helton's going to turn into Pete Carroll, but most of their best players in that program are freshmen and sophomores. I think they had started a freshman quarterback. I think USC will be at least a top 25, kind of 8-4, 9-3 team, because I just think they'll be talented enough to do that. So those two LA schools will be better. I think it was a really horrible year in the Pac-12. I don't think the Pac-12 is going to be great, but I think it's going to have a little. This stuff is cyclical. I just think you'll start to see some of these other places, like Oregon State's not going to be as awful. They made a little bit of progress. Cal's decent. I think Washington and Stanford are usually going to be good, and I think Oregon's recruiting really well. So that's why I don't think it'll get much better than this.
Well, I think that I think it's too early to judge Herm. I mean, it did go better than people expected. At the same time, as people pointed out, exact same overall and conference record as Todd Graham's last season last year. But the weird one is Sumlin. That was, you know, they got off to the worst start possible. Then they started to rally a little bit. Khalil Tate got healthy. And then just, you know, got destroyed by Washington State last week and blew an enormous lead against their rival to finish 5-7. So just a terrible first season for him. And I have to think that's probably going to be all she wrote for Khalil Tate. I can't imagine he'll be back next year.
Yeah, Michael Lev, who used to cover USC for the Orange County Register, he covers Arizona. And he, I think, asked Khalil Tate something along the lines of, will you comment on whether you're going to be back? This was your last game. And I think he said, like, next question or something.
Yeah.
Deflected it.
We don't know all the details there, but clearly that is not a great marriage there with someone in Tate for whatever reason. So I would assume he's going to be moving on. And I don't know, maybe that's a good thing for someone. It seems like he couldn't have managed this one much worse. But that's off to a rough start. There's nothing about this year that would make me say, you know what, he'll get a turnaround there, no problem. With Herm, you know, I didn't give him the benefit of the doubt when he was hired, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt now and see what he can build there. But, you know, you brought up something we should have brought up in that 20-minute Clay Helton discussion. In deciding to bring him back for another year, you're just giving Chip Kelly another year to get to start closing that gap and possibly moving right past you. If you're going to make a change, do it now. Give that person a chance to get it going, because Chip's going to get it going, obviously, at UCLA.
Yeah, I think that's going to make things really interesting. But, again, Lynn Swad made his decision, and we'll see if he was right or if, this is another case where maybe we underestimated the person, like a lot of us did with Herm. We'll see.
As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Bruce and I will be in the same place, rare occasion, Friday night. We were both attending the Pac-12 championship game. I am genuinely interested in the game, and clearly you are. I do worry that it's going to be the lowest rated Power 5 conference championship game ever televised.
Really, Stu? I don't know. Thanks for coming on the show and torpedoing our broadcast.
Just people nationally. First of all, any championship conference championship game now that where the teams don't have a chance at the playoff is going to be at a disadvantage. Of course, this one's on Friday night. I mean, if you're not watching that one, why not? But and then, I don't know, Utah's not a big brand name team. This is the first time in 10 years, by the way, that a Power 5 conference championship game, both teams already have 3 losses. So all that being said, I mean, it's going to be a cool story one way or the other. Like we said, one of these teams is going to go to Pasadena, and people like you and me still care about that.
Yeah, thanks, Stu. That was quite a hype job you did of our broadcast.
Well, I mean, I know the Audible listeners are going to watch because you're going to be part of the broadcast. I'm not worried. People that listen to the Audible watch the Pac-12 championship game, let's be honest. Whether you're going to be able to get some of the SEC audience, we shall see. Good luck to you guys on that, by the way. Hey, you did just get the Ohio State Michigan game as the most watched game of the year. So everything else is cherry on top at this point.
There you go. Thank you, Stu.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.
If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to The Audible at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd like to thank our producer, Nick Fink, and we'd like to thank Kevin and the Octaves for our intro song, Dangerous. You can download their music on iTunes or Spotify. If you haven't subscribed to The Athletic yet, what are you waiting for? Read both myself and Bruce and all our other great writers there. Go to theathletic.com/theaudible and get 25% off. You can also follow our coverage at The Athletic CFB. You can follow me at SL Mandel. Follow Bruce at Bruce Feldman CFB. We'll see you next time. Come on, get over here. Jump out of place, throw our money in.